On the Fly with Jaymon G, roving the grounds of Oshkosh, covering air venture A to Z. In Warbirds, in ultralights, down on the farm, at the museum and Pioneer Airport, at the seaplane base, over at the Vintage Red Barn, at the EAA Air Academy, at the Aviation Learning Center, at Light Sport. On the Fly is on the air. And now, your host, Jaymon G.
And good afternoon, Jaymon G on the Fly. You're listening to EAA Radio AM 1210, 93.1 on the FM and on the web worldwide at airventure.org. We are down on the farm today. Been looking forward to this all week down in the ultralight area. I'm sitting with Tim Bogenhagen. Good afternoon, Tim.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
It sure is good to be back on the farm.
Hey, thanks a lot. It is great down here.
The weather didn't cooperate very much last night, did it? But we are looking for brighter skies this afternoon, and I think it's actually going to be pretty nice.
Brighter skies, yeah, you bet.
For those who are listening on the air, this is actually Friday now at about 12 noon. For those that are joining us here live, they're going to enjoy some better weather today. So you have some exciting people lined up for us to talk to, but before we start with that, why don't we talk about ultralights? Over the last year, what's been happening in the ultralight business?
All right, great. Yeah, the ultralights have seen some neat developments lately. There's a couple of the manufacturers who have done some really neat things. There's one of the manufacturers who has produced the Flight Star ultralight over all these years, for the last 20 years or so, has actually modified an existing single-seat Flight Star and put an electric engine on it. She calls it his E-Spider, E for electric, Spider, because that's the name of his ultralight. So it's an E-Spider. It meets ultralight requirements, and he's got it right down here on the farm. He's actually flying it last night, and it is the neatest little thing in the world.
Wow. Is he going to fly it every night?
If the weather cooperates, absolutely.
That'd be cool. I definitely want to come down and see that. Is it going to be priced in the same range as any other ultralight?
I don't know about price. I would imagine right now, you know, there's probably a premium on it, probably being new technology and, you know, not really able to produce in mass that, you know, you might need to get prices down.
It seems to me that with batteries required, it'd be awfully heavy. I wonder how he keeps the weight down.
Well, that's the limiting feature here. You're exactly right. The batteries are heavy, so they can only have so many batteries. At the present time, he's doing like flight times of 30 to 40 minutes is all you're going to get out of it before you got to recharge it.
And then the charge process probably isn't just an hour or two. It's probably, what, 6 or 7 hours?
Huh? No, I think he's talking about 3 hours using 220.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Very cool. So how about in the organization? You're the executive director of ultralights at EAA. I know that there's a lot of exciting things going on at EAA alone, not to mention ultralights. How about your end?
Oh, yeah, ultralights. This year, we really made a concerted effort to work with the volunteers to try and bring some new energy into the ultralight area here down in the farm at AirVenture, try and get more people to come in and enjoy the area and have fun with their aircraft. Specifically, we were calling this year the Year of the Antique Ultralight, and we've had a number of owners of antique ultralights bring them in and show them on display here. So you walk out in the parking area in front of the ultralight barn, and you'll see Weight Shift Quicksilvers out there. You'll see Lasers out there, twin engine ultralights, Hummingbird out there. There's an Eagle out there. There's just some really cool old ultralights that are just so neat that you just don't see very often anymore, but owners brought them here because of the Year of the Antique Ultralights. So a lot of us are getting a good kick out of going and checking those out again. Brings back a lot of memories for a lot of people.
Now, this is AirVenture Week, of course, so you've probably been going to a lot of meetings. Are we going to hear some exciting announcements here shortly?
I wish there were some exciting announcements about ultralights. You know, I mean, we'd all love to see a 400-pound ultralight, but that ain't happening. Ultralights are restricted to single seat, 254 pounds, 5 gallons of gas, 55 knot speed, and 24 knot stall speed. So that's what an ultralight is, and that's what we're happy to have. The beautiful thing about ultralights here in the United States is we have total freedom from the standpoint of we're not required to hold an FAA-issued pilot certificate. We're not required to hold a medical certificate from the FAA. The vehicles we fly are not required to be registered or certificated by the FAA. So the FAA allows us to use our good common sense to operate safely and enjoy this sport of ultralighting. And that's one of the really cool things and the neat privileges we have here in the United States that many countries just do not have. Other countries have ultralights, but they're not allowed to fly them without permits and registrations.
So even to this day, even with all the changes in light sport, et cetera, you still have the benefits that were afforded with the original, is it Part 103?
The original Part 103 privileges we're still operating under. That was enacted in 1982. So we've been enjoying this now for 27 years, and we're hoping it's going to be another 27. EAA is a strong supporter of the ultralight movement, and we want to encourage people to be able to fly ultralights and take advantage of that privilege and freedom offered by flying under those conditions. Of course, we want people to do it safely. So we have information and people who can help others who want to get involved in ultralighting so they can learn how to do it safely and understand what the limitations are. With these privileges, we do have limitations, and sure, the way we operate, we got to make sure we don't endanger other people.
Well, and you want to keep the privilege. That's a big thing. Self-regulating to keep the privilege alive.
Exactly.
Is important. Tell me a little bit about the process, and we talk about this every year, but we may have new listeners again this year. Somebody wants to buy and operate an ultralight. What should they do?
Best thing to do is probably to try and find local people near you that are already doing it, that are already flying ultralights and have an understanding of them, because these are people that you can learn from and get an understanding of what is ultralighting like in your area. There's different parts of the country, ultralighting's a little bit different. And in the big cities, ultralighting's different than out in the country, because we can't fly ultralights over the big city.
Right.
So, you know, we're limited. We can't do that. So, of course, you know, there are access issues. The thing that people should really consider doing is contacting the EAA. We're a source of information to provide them information on how you ultralight, how you go about get training for ultralights, where you might find an ultralight to buy, where you might store your ultralight, and other people in your area that are actually doing it.
Now, over the last, few years, there's been a migration of sorts from ultralight to light sport in some cases, especially with the heavier aircraft. How is that movement going? Are we seeing a lot of numbers of people re-registering? And I know there was a deadline, and then the FAA extended the deadline, and where are we now?
The Sport Pilot Light Sport rules created an opportunity for people to get a sport pilot certificate to fly in a light sport aircraft. The FAA created an opportunity to take a fat ultralight and convert it into an experimental light sport aircraft. The last count I saw, there was roughly 7,000 registered experimental light sport aircraft. So this is 7,000 aircraft that converted from fat ultralight over to registered aircraft and enjoying the privilege as a sport pilot flying it. Of course, the big benefit and advantage in doing that is for the people flying two-seaters, you now have the ability to carry a passenger and just fly for fun, which is a limitation placed on ultralights, where we're only limited to single-seaters.
Or two place for instruction only, is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that is a benefit. Do you see very many people migrating from the small ultralights over into light sport, registering with N numbers so that they can log that time towards higher ratings?
Sure, absolutely. And that's no different than it's really always been in terms of ultralighting. It's always been a entry point for people to get into flying relatively easily, relatively inexpensively, very little government regulation. As people do it, some people decided, hey, I want to fly something a little bigger, a little faster, and so I'm going to go ahead and get a pilot certificate and fly in a larger aircraft. You know, I've experienced and met many people along the way who've done just that. They've progressed from ultralight pilot into flying larger aircraft as an FAA certificated pilot.
And that has been a very popular thing. And now you're telling us that the ultralight movement, the small light Part 103 ultralight movement, is still moving right along, and we have new aircraft being manufactured to this day, and the movement's still very much alive.
Very much alive. I've done two presentations at the show here on getting started in ultralights, and each presentation I've had 40 people in there, and you know, they were all very excited and wanting to get into ultralights. And in this day and age, with the economy the way it is, it is the cheapest way to get into powered flight. And the neat thing about ultralights, that once people are exposed to it, they understand, man, flying an ultralight is really neat, because it's lightweight, it's out in the open, it's more like freedom and flying. It's totally different than sitting in a 60-year-old smelly Cessna.
It's that special plastic smell.
Well, you don't even get the plastic smell. You go on one of these open frame Quicksilvers, and you know, it's totally wind in the face, wind up the pant legs. It's thrill. You know, it's a thrill. It's kind of like Some people like to ride motorcycles, and they get kind of a thrill from that, you know, wind in the face. It's the same thing with an ultralight.
Well, very good. Tim, tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the coming year down here in Ultralights. After AirVenture is over the end of this week, what are you going to start doing? What's the next road forward here?
Well, we want to continue to build on what we've done this year in the ultralight area. We're very pleased to see so many owners of ultralights bring them in down here on the farm and park them out in front of the barn and camp under the wings so visitors can enjoy them and look at them and reminisce. And these same owners are flying at night in the nightly pattern, and we want to build on that. We want to make it even better for next year, so we're working with the Ultralight Council and the ultralight volunteers to determine new ways that we might be able to make it even funner, make it more enjoyable for somebody to want to bring their ultralight down on the farm so next year it's even bigger and better.
All right, Tim, well, thank you very much for joining us on EA Radio down here on the farm. It's good to be down here, and we're going to continue here in just a few moments, talk to a couple of your people down here on the farm and get really excited about ultralights and light sport.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate you coming down here and broadcasting from the area down here. And to all the listeners, I would encourage you and invite you down to the ultralight area. Please come on down and check out the nightly flying. Every night we fly starting at 6:30. In the morning we start flying at 7 o'clock. 7 to 9 a.m. powered parachutes fly. And then from 9 a.m. to noon, fixed wings fly. And then from noon to 3 p.m., home-built rotorcraft fly.
All right, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. That was my next question. All right, Tim, thanks a lot. And we'll be right back on EA Radio AM 1210, 93.1 FM, and on the web worldwide at airventure.org.